Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, the captain. And with me, as per usual, is my science officer, David Sabal. Hello.
Hello, Captain.
So those that are new listeners, you can find all of our broadcasts, past and present, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Just search Star Trek From the Holodeck. Leave us reviews as well. It helps. All right, so Dave, it's been a while since you and I have sat down in the studio to discuss Star Trek news.
Yeah, yeah, because we're coming off of a rocky point.
Simmer down over there, Dave. Let's not be negative.
Okay.
But yes, we have been covering various things. Star Trek Picard has kept us busy.
Busy.
For a while, and then before that, we were on hiatus because of our annual winter break. But now we are back to discuss Star Trek news. And because we have not done an actual update show in quite some time, there's a lot to get through because there has been some things, some earth-shattering things. Some good, some bad. It just depends on your own viewpoint.
Yeah.
Viacom and CBS are now one company again.
Amen. Something that we've been waiting for.
Yeah, Dave, and this is a positive.
It is.
For Star Trek fans because it brings the movie properties and the TV series back together. And yes, the Roddenberry estate made sure that these different organizations still played nice. They couldn't just go in willy-nilly and disrupt canon and say, hey, listen, we're not beheld by anything because we're separate now. So there were still rules to govern Trek.
Yeah, he didn't want them to just swarm the carcass and basically rip at it like vultures.
Right. But the reason why we were given the Kelvin Timeline series was because it was a fun way to give the audience Star Trek that didn't run the risk of disrupting anything that perhaps CBS might have been working on from the TV front.
Yeah.
It was something that could run parallel to the TV universe because it was in an alternate timeline. And it worked. For a couple years, it worked. But now that CBS and Viacom are now merged, we don't need to play in different arenas. We can now bring everything back together. So we have that. And that's a positive because something about Star Trek that's always been a huge plus for me when it comes to the Star Trek fandom or the Star Trek universe is that everything's connected. And this is something you and I have said various times on our shows, Dave. It was a connected universe before the connected universes were cool.
Yes.
Star Trek has been doing it since day one. For 50 plus years, everything has been connected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, it is the originator of continuity when it comes to nerd continuity.
And Dave, for 30, 40 years, it was pretty fucking flawless.
Yep.
In terms of canon, there was no one that really tried to break it or bend it. It wasn't until the new recent Star Trek universe, what they're calling it now, era with Alex Kurtzman, that they might have played a little fast and loose with certain things. And for the most part, I'm probably 80-20 on board with the Alex Kurtzman Trek universe.
Yeah, I'm getting to 80-20 like you because like I was a little disappointed at first when, you know, all the Trek canon that we knew beforehand. Mm-hmm. Kind of was thrown on the wayside.
Well, I don't think it was thrown on the wayside or disregarded. I think they realized, hey, this is 2018. Is that when Discovery launched?
Yeah.
Hey, it's 2018. It's a new time. We have to start blazing some trails here, and we may play fast and loose. We may bend a few things, and we have to in order to move forward. And to be fair to Alex Kurtzman and the Star Trek universe, what we have right now, I mean, it's what Michael Piller and Rick Berman essentially did. And Roddenberry did in the 80s with TNG. You know how many people was like, wait a second, this isn't my fucking Trek. Who's this bald guy in an android? Captain Kirk is my captain. I remember my mother telling me that people hated TNG when we were watching it because my family was a big original series family. That's what my family watched, you know, around the dinner table. We watched the reruns. So when TNG came out, people hated it. People hated Deep Space Nine. So
absolutely.
You have to make changes. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, as they say. So I understand that Kurtzman's coming in here and stirring the pot. I get it. And he's slowly winning me over. Picard took me back a bit.
Oh, it took me back.
I was 90-10. And now I'm 75-80. Yeah, in terms of being on side of this new universe of Star Trek.
I'm pretty much like I started off 60-40 on it, got to about 80-20. But then with the recent happenings with Picard, it fell down to probably about like I'm 75. Like it's.
Well, dude, I mean, Discovery Season 2 was pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping Discovery Season 3 is going to be everything that Season 2 was and more.
There's a lot riding now on Season 3.
Yeah. The future is bright for Star Trek, especially now that it is under one umbrella. We don't have to be shy anymore when we're moving forward with movies. And yes, I'm one of the few pure. I call myself a Star Trek purist. Yes, I would definitely consider myself a Star Trek purist. And I'm one of the few purists that was really on board with the Kelvin timeline. I was a big fan of it. I thought it was smart what they did because my biggest problem with this reboot when it was announced in 2008, when it was originally announced that JJ would be rebooting Star Trek, I was like, no, dude,
why?
Don't fucking reboot. At that time, it was 40 some years of Star Trek. No fucking way. The TV shows need to matter still. And the loophole he created within his own movie was fucking genius.
Oh, yeah. You know, I thought it was. Everyone kind of poo-pooed it at first, but I'm like going, no, this is a genius thing to do.
Yes, because you can use elements that were great in Star Trek and kind of do your own thing without disrupting the regular Trek that we all grew up with.
Exactly.
So it was smart. And it was, and from a business standpoint, it was also smart. You can make your blockbuster Star Trek film that sells tickets. And it was great.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, like, am I a fan of the Kelvin timeline? Yeah, I am.
Darkness was a little rough, but
I could forgive it though.
I could too.
I could easily forgive Into Darkness,
especially after watching Picard.
Enters sainthood.
Yeah, compared Into to Darkness is like Schindler's List compared to Picard.
But like, especially when you take into context about like Star Trek Beyond. I think the only reason why Star Trek Beyond, quote, unquote, failed was because people just didn't give it a shot.
Well, Dave, it's not a bad movie. I mean, quality wise, it's amazing. Acting wise, it's amazing. There's some laziness to that script. And I don't understand that because JJ isn't a lazy filmmaker. So I don't know what happened with Into Darkness with the Tribble being introduced as a way to bring back life. And then they use it to bring back Kirk. And then so you saw it coming from a mile away. Like, oh, someone's going to die. But then they're going to bring it back with a fucking Tribble. And then they tried to redo the moment between Spock and Kirk. And I'm like, you can't do it because the reason why it worked so well in Wrath of Khan was because they already had years of rapport. Decades of rapport. They were crewmen. They loved each other. They were the best of buddies. And then in Into Darkness, it was like, hey, dude, I hated you like a year and a half ago, and now we're best friends, and I'm going to cry about you dying.
Yeah.
It just didn't work emotionally for me. But overall, I could forgive it because the original Star Trek film, or I should say the original Kelvin timeline film, was great, and I loved Star Trek Beyond as well.
Oh, yeah, Star Trek Beyond. That's the only reason why, as I was saying, is like, I think the only reason why Star Trek Beyond failed was people didn't give it a chance.
Yeah, well, because Into Darkness just left such a bad taste in everyone's mouth. Yeah. And the reason why we're even reminiscing right now, Dave, is because there were rumors for the past year that Tarantino would continue on that side of things. And I knew that once I was hoping that they push this movie out quickly, because the merger of Viacom and CBS has been a thing in the works for years.
It seemed like that was going to be the dinner bell, so to speak, for a new Star Trek film.
It was supposed to be the thing. It was supposed to be what JJ did for 2009.
Yeah,
it was going to be Tarantino's version of Star Trek was going to be the 2020 version of that. It was going to bring Star Trek back to the mainstream in a very big way, in a blockbuster way. I mean, it made headlines. You put Tarantino's name attached to anything and it's going to make waves.
Yeah. And suddenly everyone was talking about it.
Right. And I think that if this merger didn't happen between Viacom and CBS, they might have still been really apt at pushing it out. But once that merger happened, and then Chris Pine just kind of continues to distance himself from Star Trek, even the Tarantino Star Trek has now been all but mothballed. And that's sad, because recently, I want to say 3 months ago, Tarantino had pretty much said that it's a done deal. It's not going to happen. He doubts that he will be directing this Star Trek film. And it's because, you know, business has changed drastically. Now that you have Viacom and CBS together, we're probably going to see something more closely aligned to what Alex Kurtzman is doing, especially now that we have an entire branch. And this is something we've never seen before in Star Trek history. We have an entire branch of a network dedicated and built from the ground up to accommodate and house Star Trek as a property, as a franchise. They're trying to treat this just as big as Disney treats the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're trying to bring everything under one roof. And I knew that was going to happen. The moment they announced that, I was like, there's no way Tarantino's movie is going to go forward with the Kelvin timeline, because why would they want to do that if they could move forward with something more closer or closely tied to what they're doing right now currently on the TV front?
Yes.
And that being said, they have announced that Noah Hawley will be directing a Star Trek movie. Now, this is the hook here, Dave. Are you ready?
Okay.
It will include an all new cast. Now, when I first read that headline, I sighed, I moaned, I threw something, I kicked my dog. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Another new cast? Because I had assumed we would be getting something that we've seen. Kirk, Spock,
McCoy.
Scotty, McCoy, right? But no, new cast, because it'll be something entirely different. New crew, new ship. And then suddenly I was like, okay, you're winning me over. Because how many times, Dave, have I said this is what they should do? I can't even remember. It's countless times, Dave, that I've said on these shows, enough with Captain Kirk, enough with Spock, enough with McCoy, enough with Picard, enough with what we've already done, been there, done that. Let's create a new era of Star Trek with some fresh faces. Cast the right people that are going to be box office draws, because that's problem number one.
Yes.
Star Trek needs to be a box office draw again. And the only way you're going to do that is finding the right director, finding the right script, and finding the right cast, the right faces that are going to put asses in seats. So this new direction they're going, I think it's fucking smart.
It's smart, and honestly, it's probably the safest route you could probably take at this point. Because just like what you said, I mean, everyone's going to be thinking Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and that could hurt your product at the end, because you're going to be beholden to those characters. Instead, you could bring in brand new characters and just focus on your story. Focus on your narrative. Make sure it works. And if they could do that, me and you are pretty much on the same boat when it comes to shows and TVs. The writing matters.
The writing's more important than
the writing anything. And the narrative matter.
Yeah.
I would rather see a well thought out, well told Star Trek story that is brand new characters that I can get behind, get to know, than see a Star Trek movie just because made just so that you could see Kirk, Spock, and McCoy again.
Right. And don't get me wrong, again, I enjoyed the Kelvin movies, and I would kill you for a Star Trek 4 with the Kelvin timeline. I think Star Trek Beyond was the movie that really took us there in that personal moment with essentially Kirk living under the shadow of what he knows of his future and what he should be doing and where he should be at.
I thought that was a genius thing to do.
It was great. I'm like, fucking yes, we're finally getting there. And the fourth movie could really start exploring these moments. But that ship has sailed. And if we can get it, I'll be happy. But if not, again, I wasn't very familiar with this writer or director, Noah Hawley. He was the showrunner of the very popular TV show on FX, the Marvel TV show Legion.
Yes.
He also was the showrunner on Fargo, the TV series.
That's where I know him from, is from Fargo.
Yes, same here. I just was not aware that he was the showrunner because I never bothered to look it up and really research the series. But when I had found out those are the projects he worked on, I'm like, okay, this guy has a knack for the art side of things. Like I don't want to say he's an art house director, but he has that indie vibe. He has a quality to his style.
Yeah.
And that got me a little excited. But Dave, it gets better. Okay. Now, in an interview earlier this year, he says to call it Star Trek 4 would be kind of a misnomer. I have my own take on the franchise as a lifelong fan. That's a key word right there. Thank you. Fans of Star Trek are the ones that should be involved because they understand what Star Trek is about.
Yes.
And now any hack director could say, oh, I'm a fan of this because I watched one series, but it gets better, Dave. Okay. He says that there's a human element to Star Trek. It's still early days, so I don't know exactly everything. But new characters often involve a new cast, he says. Then he says, he references Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is, of course, we all know is widely considered to be one of the best Treks of all time.
It's quote unquote the easiest go-to.
Right. And he says, it's moments like William Shatner putting on his reading glasses and lowering Khan's shields, which cost like $9.50. There's no big action sequence. He just is clever.
Yeah.
There's something really uplifting about that feeling. He says, I went to Paramount and I just had my own ideas for what I wanted to do with it. So that's the direction that I'm going in. It's still very early days, so I can't really be more specific, but it's going to be different. The fact that he references a human moment, because that is a moment that always has stood out to me in Star Trek. You're in the fucking future.
Yes.
And yet, you know, Picard or McCoy has mentioned that they have eradicated the common cold, but William Shatner puts on glasses. And logically, maybe it doesn't make sense because poor eyesight could be cured, right?
Yeah.
But it's the director's prerogative of that film to do that because it brings a human moment.
And if you're going to do a Star Trek story in any sense, the biggest theme in Star Trek is being human.
Yes, humanity.
It's the humanity. It's the concept of what it takes to be human. And if Noah Hawley is, that's where he's heading, you have my ears perked.
Yes, my interest is piqued.
Yeah.
Because with that simple retort within this interview, it calms the waters a bit for us Uber Star Trek freaks, because we're like, okay, dude, you get it.
You get it.
You get it.
And also for those people, for those Star Trek fans out there, they're saying, no, what we want the story of our favorite Star Trek people. Why give us new people? Listen, it works in Star Trek to introduce new crews.
Yeah, and when those days are done, I am a Captain Kirk guy. He's always been my favorite. But we had 50 years of Captain Kirk. It's time to move on.
And there's more to Star Trek than Kirk and Picard. I mean, come on. There's Sisko. There's Janeway.
Yeah.
Even
all of them are great in their own way.
Even our special Archer is right there.
Well, you can't all be perfect.
But like, even down to Discovery. Discovery is an entirely new cast and crew, and
Captain Pike.
Got behind them. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got behind them.
Yeah. I think we're on the right path here. It's too early to say.
It's too early.
But I will say that I was a little more calm when I read this interview, because I was a little pissed off that Tarantino's movie wasn't going to move forward at this point. And I know there may be Star Trek fans out there, Dave, that says, oh, but you're a purist. How would you ever want Tarantino to direct a Star Trek film? It would be an abomination.
No, it wouldn't.
And I'm like, no, it wouldn't. It would be different. But Tarantino is a filmmaker through and through. He lives and breathes the 1960s. He would probably bring an element to Star Trek that has been missing. And not only that, he would bring Star Trek back to where it needs to be in order to succeed.
Yeah.
I know people like to poo-poo on mainstream appeal and pop culture, but Star Trek is a part of pop culture, always will be. And for it not to completely die out like it has from the movie side, you got to keep reinvigorating it. You got to give it that energy. And Tarantino would be the name, the directing name that would give it that boost, that oomph, to put people in seats. He would have changed the way many people look at Star Trek. So because of that, I feel like he was a great choice for a very specific type of movie.
Yes. But like, the one question that I have that I would be really curious to see how this plays out, they've been talking about, okay, we're going to bring a new cast in, right?
Right.
Well, if the idea is to bring in names to be in a Star Trek film, there's always been that part of me that says, well, if they get too big of a name, then that takes away from the movie. Like, I used to remember everyone was constantly saying, like, Star Wars should bring in Brad Pitt.
Oh, please.
All that, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, no, they've said the same things for Star Trek.
And they say the same things for Star Trek. And I'm like going, if they're aiming for that, I don't think that would work.
No, I'm not talking like putting Brad Pitt in. I'm talking about finding the right charismatic new faces that can carry this new franchise forward.
You know, don't turn it into the Fast and the Furious with all of a sudden The Rock and
we don't need John we don't Cena. Need Dwayne Johnson sitting in the captain seat, please.
Exactly.
I would fucking shoot myself in the head. Yeah, Dave, why do you got to bring up things that make me angry? And also, we need Noah Hawley to show Michael Chabon how to write.
No, no, no. He needs to kill Michael Chabon.
Oh, David. Very rude.
I have no filter when it comes to Michael Chabon now, because I'm sorry. You ruined my life.
Well, Dave, you've ruined my life.
But like with Michael Chabon, he enters that echelon of like creative, quote unquote, let's put this in parentheses, creative people that I think I would rather them just disappear.
Well, the reason why I even bring this up is because you and I, and again, for those people that may not have listened, we had been covering Star Trek Picard.
Yes.
And we tried to remain positive. We're fans of Discovery.
Yeah.
Because the series overall is written fine. It might have played fast and loose with Star Trek, but overall, the series was written well. There were capable writers involved for the most part. Picard was just an abomination. in almost every single fucking way. And we're not, I'm not going to get into it, David. I like how I blame you. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to be negative. But we've been negative for 10 weeks.
Yes, we have.
Well, I'll take the next 6 weeks because that's when we started seeing everything fall apart with Picard.
With Picard.
Listen to our discussions to find out exactly what problems there were in terms of writing. It's not the story necessarily that we had issues with. It's your story. I'm not writing a story, so I'm never going to say this is what your story should be. But I am going to tell you how to write your story, because any asshole can come up with a story. Say, well, I want to do this and that. I'm like, good, write it. Well, I don't know how. Well, then fuck off.
Then fuck off.
And that's what the studio should have said to Michael Chabon, because the guy doesn't know how to write. So that was my problem, is the way everything just worked together. It was just bad. It was horrible. So, oh, fuck, Dave, it's so depressing I think about it. It's so depressing. It's the only Star Trek series that I look at and say, wow, that is just awful.
Remember, Mike, Michael Chabon has stated he's happy that Picard is this divisive, and he's testing the boundaries with his fans.
Divisive, dude. Divisive is when you make like Data fuck Tasha Yar. It's like, holy shit, I can't believe they did that. That's divisive. That gets people talking. That's water cooler moments. The Mirror Universe in Star Trek Discovery season one. Holy shit. The captain of Discovery was the Mirror Universe captain. Can some people say, holy shit, that's awful? Sure. That's divisive. That's water cooler discussion. That's where people start debating. Picard was just one bad writing decision after another. It's not because it's divisive. You're not a provocative writer, Michael Chabon. You're a piece of shit writer that should never ever pick up a keyboard, a pen, a pencil. In fact, you know what? Your fingers should be fucking broken.
No, hold on.
Fingers can heal. They should be cut off.
Now, Mike, take a deep breath. Enter your, you know, special Romulan space.
All right. But the reason why we bring this up is because there are people out there that want to defend Star Trek Picard.
Yes.
And listen, defend it. Don't defend it. Like it. You can enjoy it. I'm glad you enjoy it, but don't try to defend bad writing.
Yes.
But because of the people's need, some people, because most people hate it, but there are some people out there trying to defend Star Trek Picard. And I cannot stand when people try to defend something new that they like by bashing old.
Yes.
And there's an article titled Star Trek Fox Movie Resurrection was weirder than Android Picard. Okay. Now, Sean Luke's rebirth in Star Trek Picard doesn't quite compare to the utterly weird way Spock died and was resurrected in Star Trek movies. Number one, that sub headline there just is
terrible.
Okay. Doesn't compare to the utterly weird way Spock died. Is this written by
Michael Chabon?
What's weird about Spock's death? The fact that it was a moment of complete and utter emotion that all inhibitions were torn away from Kirk and Spock as they express their dying love for each other as best friends. What's weird about that?
What's weird about that?
That is fucking Shakespeare. You will and always be my friend. How is that weird, asshole?
Yeah.
Number two, the resurrection was built into a movie, essentially, before the idea even came out. That's what you call writing. Good writing, because you use ideas that were already set up. The idea of the Genesis Project in Star Trek II, the whole idea that it brings life back. Creates life. It takes dead organisms, dead cells, and rejuvenates and brings it back.
Because it was the Genesis wave.
Yes. That very idea, which was introduced in Star Trek II, was never going to be a way to bring Spock back. It was a convenient way to use it in Star Trek III because Leonard Nimoy, let me take you back in the Wayback Machine. Leonard Nimoy, for years, struggled with being Spock. He didn't want to be known as Spock. In fact, he wrote a book called I Am Not Spock, if memory serves me right. And then like 10 years later, he wrote another book saying I am Spock. Because he, like a lot of actors that get, I don't want to say typecast, they get put into a role and that's what they're known for. Sometimes actors struggle with that because they want to do something else. But unfortunately, people see them as just that. That was Leonard Nimoy for many, many years. He wanted to be killed off and removed from Star Trek.
Yes.
And then he changed his mind. And that's why they put him in Star Trek 3. Okay, so it was not planned to bring him back, but it was a convenient way using the Genesis idea to bring him back.
To bring him back.
How is that weird? How is that? Can you explain to me how can anyone think that's bizarre in a universe that's enveloped in the very idea of science? And even the Genesis Project was very steeped in science, French science, but science. And they use that to bring him back. And then putting his consciousness, because of the Vulcan mind melt, which was also set up in canon years prior, the Katra, using that to store his consciousness and putting it back into his body. How is that weird? How's it's that all weird? Built. Is it mystical a bit? Is it alien? Yes.
Yes.
But it's all logical. It makes sense based on years of Trek prior in TV shows and, of course, the prior movie.
Now you take it in parallel with Picard's. Well, it's the utter opposite.
And tell us why, Dave.
Because, like, when you take it to the effect of what they did to Picard by putting his consciousness into a golem, a empty shell. Which,
by definition, a golem is not a good thing.
Yeah, golem is not a good thing.
Good job, Shayban, even naming the object you put Picard into, not even matching should be thematically.
And also the way that they did it by simply saying, oh, I just pushed this button. And you know what? It works because of the power of my imagination. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, but you had a deeper thought in our Picard discussion about why it derails
everything about Picard.
Yeah.
Because, like, think about it. You take this moment of his death and you put him into a synthetic body, which goes against everything that we started about Captain Picard, about his battle against the violation that he underwent becoming Locutus. And then you just basically wipe it all away. Nope, it's okay. We're going to shove you into this cybernetic body just like the Borg did. And at that moment, that's when I broke on the show.
Yeah.
Because you essentially did something. I hate using this word, but you raped a character. You violated him because his core tenet was based against something what you just did. And yet everything is fine. And people, just like what you said, is like, people say, well, this isn't as weird as Spock's rebirth. And you, as you put it, Spock's rebirth at least was based on stuff that was put prior to us. So we can actually believe this.
There were things already set up. And the way this person blogs about it says, revisiting the original series films highlights how utterly mad the whole scenario was.
And when you think about
when I go back, it's not mad because those elements were already set up. If in Star Trek 3, we've never heard of the Vulcan mind meld, and we have never realized before that they're a telepathic race, a telepathic species, and we knew nothing about their culture and the mythology that's behind their culture and their beliefs, then yes, it would be like, yeah, that's pretty bad writing. Star Trek 3 literally just made everything up to bring back this character. It'd be awful.
Yeah.
But it's not awful because they're using before at that time, what was it, the 80s? They're using what, 20 plus years of Star Trek canon to bring back a character in a way that makes sense, not to mention things that they had set up in the second film. It's not ludicrous.
It's not ludicrous.
It's actually heartfelt. You see the reunion of best friends, the understanding finally of Spock's father finally understanding his relationship with humans, Spock's relationship with humans, understanding how much they care for him.
Yeah.
Fleshing out the relationship between Spock and Kirk further, Sarek and Spock, Sarek and Kirk, understanding the culture of Vulcan. Dude, what is fucking weird about it? It's fucking amazing. I want to go watch the movie now.
And then you take it into Picard, as I stated, you have no basis of this race.
You take a guy that his life mission was to try to destroy a cybernetic species. He was obsessed with it.
He was Captain Ahab.
That's exactly what I was about to say. There were allegories to that. In fact, they specifically said it. Fuck the allegory. The woman in First Contact called him that.
Yeah.
You will get your whale.
And then he all of a sudden goes, no, no.
Yeah. You have a character that was built on the back of trauma because of an invasive cybernetic species that took him without his consent. In fact, the very show Picard was built on that idea as well.
Yes.
And then without his permission, they put his consciousness into an android.
Based on.
It doesn't make sense. I don't mind that his body was put into that. It's fucking weird. Or his consciousness. It's fucking weird. But it kind of goes against theme-wise.
No, it's not kind
of. And the characterization of Picard, it goes against all of that. So I just wanted to get that out there because I was furious about this article trying to justify Picard. If you like Picard, fine. But don't bash something that is great because you want to show people, well, you guys are mad about this, but Star Trek 3 did this.
And it's completely different.
And it's just so much heart, so much soul to Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 2. Oh, and you try to compare it in some half-assed way to a series that was concocted, I'm sure, while Shaban was taking a shit.
Pretty much, it feels like it, because I'm sorry, a lot of his concepts have no basis on anything. The one thing that really irritates me is toward the very end, you have that moment when they had this chance to explain something, but they did the most anti-Star Trek thing by saying, oh, this thing works because I imagine it to work.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other thing that makes me angry as well, but it's not directly connected to Picard himself.
Yeah.
I'm going to go watch Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3 now, back to back.
Well, they're definitely rewatchable movies.
Oh, dude, all the Star Trek films are, for the most part.
For the most part.
I have my problems with Star Trek 4. Not the story. The heart is great. It just because they went to the 80s, it becomes very dated because of that.
That, and also it's kind of like that breaking the fourth wall thing.
Yeah, and time traveling around the sun. That's a bit silly, but we'll give them a pass on that.
Hey, and whales can save the world.
Listen, David, if Picard can be put into an android, whales can speak to a probe. All right? Yeah. Let's go to a very quick break, and then when we get back, we'll jump into the rest of our Star Trek discussions. We'll be right back.
Cry havoc! And let's slip the dogs of war!
Everything!
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
roll the dice.
I love eating radiation-infested fish. It may add an extra couple inches to my penis. Why don't we gotta die from stuff? Like, why can't, like, a disease cause something like your dick getting bigger? Hey, listen, if you get coronavirus, your dick might swell.
Dude, like, what? Triple dick disease. Like,
that's a thing.
It's never a thing.
That should be a thing.
I know, but it's not.
I believe that's elephantitis of, you know, like...
Exclusively of the peen?
Well, if it's there, then, you know, like, then I guess, you know, like, that would be a good disease.
That is true.
Thank you. There's never... A lot of you knows and... to get to the exact same thing Thomas just said.
You see, I think I qualify for being elderly now. Yeah. Will I be useful to the network if all of a sudden I come in and I suffer Alzheimer's or like some sort of Parkinson's? You know,
of course. You're never leaving. Okay, you're not gonna have the opportunity, Tony.
So if I suffer dementia immediately, like right now,
you're staying in that chair.
Okay.
And we're gonna tell you you time traveled. Make up lies. The Rain Man Show, exclusively on Rain Man Digital. Head over to RainManDigitalMedia.com for more details, or search for it wherever you listen to podcasts. Keep Rain Man Digital on the air through 2020 by pledging to our Patreon page. Your continued support allows us to continue to make great content and offer even better features in the future. Help us keep the lights on in the studio by pledging $1 to $10 a month. Go to patreon.com/rainmandigital to pledge.
Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff that will spice up your bedroom is even better. Just go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off, and then we'll load on the free stuff. Just enter this very exclusive code, RAINMAN, at checkout, and you'll get 10 tantalizing free gifts, including a sexy item for him, a special toy for her.
Ooh.
And a third item you'll both enjoy.
Ooh.
And 6 extra special bonus items that are sure to rev your engine, pique your curiosity, and even blow you away. Plus,
free shipping.
Always sent in discreet packaging. Go to adamandeve.com now. Get 50% off plus the 10 free gifts when you enter the exclusive offer code RAINMAN. Again, that's RAINMAN. Because without it,
no free stuff.
That's RAINMAN at adamandeve.com.
Energize.
A ship in trouble making a forced landing, sir.
It comes from the Talos Star Group.
Their call letters check with a survey expedition.
My name is Christopher Pike, commander of the Space Vehicle Enterprise. My destination is the Talos Star Group.
There's a canyon to the left. We can set you down there completely unobserved.
I think it's time to show the captain our secret.
This is Vina. Her parents are dead. She was born almost as we crashed.
This is all some sort of trap.
Are you real?
Perhaps they made me out of dreams and
forgotten. Is there any way I can keep them controlling my life?
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. All right, Dave, so we have some news here about the very first Star Trek novel set in the Kelvin timeline. How did it take 10 years to get to this? Dave, the Kelvin timeline will go down in history as the most missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. That's actually a better way of putting
missed it. Missed opportunity. We haven't even gotten a book until now. 10 years plus, 11 years since the very first 2009 J.J. Abrams reboot. But we are finally getting Star Trek novel that's set in the Kelvin timeline. And it's going to be out just this week, actually, just a couple of days away from broadcast, from the time of broadcast. And it is written, are you ready, David, by the great Alan Dean Foster.
And that is why I will buy it day one.
It's already on pre-order for me. As soon as I saw his, first off, when I heard about it, I was excited. Then I saw that his name was attached to it. I mean, Alan Dean Foster is one of the greatest sci-fi novelists out there.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And he has never written an original Star Trek novel yet.
Yet. This is the first one.
This is the first one. So I'm sure he's going to be putting all his cards out there. Like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. a man like this probably has so many fucking ideas. And the fact that we're going to be able to explore the Kelvin timeline once again, even if it's through a book, I will take it.
I'll take it.
Absolutely. Now, his previous Star Trek work includes the Star Trek log series of novelizations of the animated series and the novelization of Star Trek 2009 and actually, the Star Trek Into Darkness. He did the novelizations for both.
I have like an old cassette audio of his from the log series.
Oh, really?
And it's freaking, it's awesome. It's still something that once in a while I'll put in there. And those audio logs were just so fun to listen to.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you can find some of that stuff on YouTube. Should I say that? Or is that promoting piracy?
Promote away. All
right. It's old, right? So the synopsis of the plot of The Unsettling the Stars, that's the title, reads, taking place in an alternate timeline created when the starship Kelvin was destroyed by a Romulan invader from the future, this bold new novel follows Captain James T. Kirk and an inexperienced crew commandeering a repaired USS Enterprise out of space dock for a simple shakedown cruise. When a distress call comes in, Enterprise must aid a large colony ship of alien refugees known as the Perenorian. The Perenorian? The Perenorian.
Perenorian.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll go with that. Who are under siege by an unknown enemy, but Kirk and his crew will find that the situation with the peaceful Perenorians is far more complicated than they bargained for. And the answers as to why they were attacked in the first place unfold in the most insidious of ways. Number one, I've had some pretty good luck so far to date with the Star Trek novels.
Yeah. I mean, the two that we covered were pretty well done.
Yeah. I don't struggle with those. I actually enjoy them for the most part. Now, this one, I do have some high expectations for because it is Alan Dean Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And it is dealing with the Kelvin timeline. And it will be out officially April 14th. That's just around the corner. And we will be doing a review of it, Dave. So make sure you get that copy and you read away. Because we'll be delving into it soon here on a show. All right, Dave, let's talk about the 12 most heartbreaking moments of Star Trek according to whatculture.com. I'm going to have some opinions on this, and I'm sure you will as well. All right. According to whatculture.com, they have listed 12 of the most heartbreaking moments of Star Trek. So let's just go through these one by one and see whether or not we agree.
Okay.
Okay. So let's start with number 12. Turning death into a fighting chance for life. Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock.
Now, they say heartbreaking, right? Heartbreaking. So it has to.
Is that a heartbreaking moment, though? Wouldn't that be a moment of rejoice?
Well, not when you put it into the context. I believe that's when David dies. When Kirk loses his son.
Hey, you know what? That is exactly what they're talking about.
So if you're heartbreaking that, yeah. That because honestly, that is when Kirk really became interesting because suddenly he became
more real.
More real.
They grounded his character. When they introduced Carol Marcus and David, that's when he became, in my opinion, a real person. In the series, I love him. He's a superhero.
Yeah.
In the original series. Superhero larger than life, right? Which was suitable for those times.
Mm-hmm.
But now, flash forward to a different time, and we expect something a little different. And they gave him some character flaws. They made him more grounded. I mean, The Wrath of Khan and The Search for Spock, they both explore the themes of aging and death.
Yeah.
And so I would agree with that. Definitely, I would agree with this. If they're talking about David, which it seems like they are, David was the chance at a family, according to them, and being a father.
And he was.
And losing him in such a violent way to then be forced to destroy the Enterprise was devastating for fans. He may have saved the day, but the cost for once may have been too high. Okay, I agree with this. Now, this is someone that gets it. Whoever wrote this article, thank you.
You get a Rain Man star.
You get a Star Trek From the Holodeck 5 stars review. All right, number 11, One Dies. Yeah, it was kind of sad. You probably don't remember this. Voyager Drone. I just watched this episode recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's where 7 and 9 basically has a child.
Yes.
They find a Borg component. It essentially simulates a crew member and creates a child from 7. It was a transporter accident. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And it takes a part of 7 and a crew member and makes a drone child. And she watches this baby grow to an adult, and he becomes a better version of the Borg.
Yeah.
And he saves the entire ship. And he sacrifices himself and dies.
And dies. And then this episode, it really hurt to watch 7 go through this.
Yeah.
Because, like, you really felt for her character. I mean, yes, up to this point, we see 7 as like this broken character trying to fix herself after being assimilated by the Borg. But in this particular episode, it became more personal at that point. Forget the Borg aspect of 7. 7 as a, I guess you could say, human being at that point, has to watch essentially her child die before her. And if there's one thing that I've always been told is, like, a parent never wants to outlive their child. And I remember this episode. It was actually Jerry Ryan did a fantastic job in this episode acting wise.
Yeah, I agree. It was a good episode. And you know what? We may do some discussions on these, on the 12 most heartbreaking moments. We may delve into each of these episodes.
And not to harp on bad things, but see, something like this makes sense for 7's character. Then you look at Picard, where, you know,
she's not really 7.
Ichabod dies.
And she's not really 7.
And she's 9. Not really 7.
She's Sarah 9. Connor.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number 10. He knows Doctor. He knows the original series, The City on the Edge of Forever. Captain Kirk always had the reputation for being a ladies' man, something that is made light of in the Kelvin Universe reboots. However, there was a time when he lost a love so painful, not because of the intense feeling they had for each other, but for the fact that Kirk knew she must die for humanity to survive.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a powerful
episode. I remember this
one,
and this was one of the best one of the best TOS episodes, because you really got to see William Shatner act his chops off.
Yeah.
In this one.
Number 9, Picard informs the crew of Sito's sacrifice, the next generation Lower Decks. I don't think I remember this episode. Sito Jaxa was a relatively small character in her first appearance as one of Wesley Crusher's cohorts involved in the accidental death of their friend. She could have been an easily forgotten throwaway character never seen again. Yeah, let's just skip past this one because I don't remember it, Dave. So why talk about something that we do not remember? I think this was the writer trying to show like a deep cut, like to prove that he's a hardcore Star Trek fan.
Hey, do you remember this?
Remember that one? She was in it for 5 minutes in 2.
Okay, this one, I'm like going, you pulled, pal.
Yeah,
you
dude, pulled. He's just trying to prove himself right there. That was us. That was us on a show.
That's like, you know, whipping out your Star Trek dick out.
Excuse me, sir, but I'm going to whip out something much larger. It's a size 12. All right, number 8 is Seren's plea for acceptance. The Next Generation, The Outcast.
This one, I agree.
Yeah.
This one was actually really good, and it doesn't deal with anything about death or anything. It just deals with a person trying to find acceptance in society and not really finding it.
Yeah, I remember this one too.
It was pretty good, and it was actually one that Jonathan Franks Riker was actually the main lead at. I thought at first, but in actuality, he wasn't the main. It was the girl.
Yeah. It was a good one. Number 7, Jadzia dies. Deep Space Nine, Tears of the Prophets.
Oh, dude, I would agree. This killed me.
This is before the internet, Dave. So there was no rumors. Because if this came out today, there would be articles saying, Terry Farrell is leaving Star Trek. And we'd be like, oh, well, I guess she's going to die. We would know. But this is in the 90s, before all the chat rooms and the social media. It just happened. Before our eyes. And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, that's how I felt. Especially after rewatching it. Yeah. You really get a sense of they were swinging for the fences for this one.
Yeah. And when you after watching the documentary that came out later.
Oh, dude, it's extra painful.
Well, you find out the story behind it more fully. And it's just Jesus Christ. That sucks.
And it sucks, too, because, like, the person that took over for Terry Farrell, right?
Yeah.
The girl who took over for Terry Farrell, she didn't do a bad job.
No, she was fine. But
she was fine.
She wasn't.
Yeah, but she was never accepted into the fan base because she essentially was a write-in for Dax.
Yeah. Number 6, LOL's Shutdown, The Next Generation, The Offspring. Members of Data's family have a very sad tendency to have premature ends.
Oh, yeah.
This is the episode about Data's daughter. Yes, yeah, that was Data's sad. Data's daughter was
sad. Especially that one scene in the very end where Data has no emotion. And like the one android his daughter's telling him what it's like and what she's seeing and stuff like that. And it's so painful.
Yeah. Number 5, O'Brien decides to die. Deep Space Nine, hard time. Yes, Dave, I had a hard time watching this. I wanted to die as well after watching this episode. It was so fucking morbidly depressing. Brilliant episode. But this is the type of episodes that Ira Steven Burr at Deep Space Nine brought to the table. These episodes that people didn't want to look at. That they delved into topics that were taboo, like suicide and PTSD. Yeah. Fuck, this episode was powerful. Yeah, this was a really good one.
It was a pretty scary one, too, when you look at it, because for longtime listeners of our channel, I made no bare bones about it, about suicide and myself, about my story, about, like, in my past. And quite honestly, this episode kind of plucks at a very, very sensitive spot for me, to the point that I can't watch it. it's
a rough watch.
It's a rough watch.
It's fantastic. It's just hard to watch. You have to be in the right mindset.
Yeah.
Number 4, The Final Melody, The Next Generation, The Inner Light. Picard's time as Kamen will forever rank as among the most beautiful episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, following the captain through his initial confusion and hostility to his surroundings, to his acceptance and then embracing of his new life, makes for a very moving story.
Now this one,
I don't know if
I don't think I would put this as heartbreaking.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I was trying to think about this. I'm like, I don't know if this was, I mean, it wasn't a bad episode. It was a good episode, but I don't know if I find it comparable to the other ones.
It was a dramatic emotion. Was it dramatic? Yeah. But I wouldn't put it in the heartbreaking category, because the heartbreaking means that there has to be something that is tragic or something that's lost about it or heavy about it. And essentially this episode, it's Picard going through his life to the very end, you know, living to an old man age.
Yeah. Number 3, T'Pol and Trip share their grief. Enterprise, Terra Prime, and I fucking agree. Number 1, Dave, the relationship between T'Pol and Trip affected me in a way that a Star Trek relationship has never done before. There was something about their relationship, how it was such a slow burn for 2.5 seasons. And then T'Pol was married. And Trip was in love with her, and she was in love with him, and they couldn't be together. It was a love that just couldn't be. It was a fairy tale type of story. And then they finally admit to each other they love each other. They get together, and then their kid dies.
Yep.
It's devastating. Fuck the Enterprise writers for doing this. This affected me in ways, dude. Like, I can't watch this episode. I don't know, something
it's
about
painful.
It.
It's yeah. real. This is what I mean by heartbreaking, because that scene, it's the one scene out of all of Enterprise that still sticks to me to this day, because essentially you get to the point when they lose their child. And this whole time in this series, T'Pol and Trip are kind of like that couple that we've been rooting for.
Yeah.
You root for these two. And then all of a sudden you get to the point that, oh, they lost their child.
Yeah.
It's like a sickening thud.
Yeah. And by this point and during Enterprise, the two characters that are the most interesting are T'Pol and Trip. They became the Picard and Data, the 7 of 9 and the Doctor.
Yeah.
The Spock and Kirk McCoy equation. At this point, that's when Enterprise really became, they were the driving force of the show. People always liked their stories. Number two, and we got to move past these ones pretty quickly because we're running out of time here. I have been and always shall be your friend.
Dude,
the death of Spock.
No, I would say that's number one.
Yeah.
Because even to this day, that's still like,
dude,
it still makes me a little
I can't
sad
watch it
and cry.
I can't watch it during certain times.
I can't watch it at all because it still chokes me up. Even yeah. when I saw recently Wrath of Khan at Alamo when they showed it. Dude, when you get to that point, I looked around and like there was grown men just like holding their mouths.
Yeah.
And because like they're like going, you get it. You get it.
Yeah. All right. Number one, are you ready for it? And I agree with this, dude. I bet you can't even guess.
Something that's that's even more heartbreaking,
dude.
Than Spock
I fucking
and
cried,
Kirk.
Dude. I fucking cried when I watched this. I'm gonna cry right now. Old Jake dies so that young Jake can be reunited with his father. Deep Space Nine, The Visitor. That was the episode where Sisko gets stuck in like a time loop.
Oh
and,
yeah.
And he only reappears every like I don't know however many years.
I think it's like 5 years.
And
or
every
15?
Time he pops up, Jake is older. And he realizes that Jake has wasted his entire life trying to figure out how to save his father. It is the most. I mean, David, I went to sleep and just had nightmares afterwards. It's just the most morbidly depressing episode of Deep Space Nine. But this is what we like, though. We like these
this
depressing
is,
ones because
it's
good,
drama.
Because it's. It's evoking feeling. It's
evoking feelings.
That's what TV shows are supposed to do. That's what art is supposed to do. And that's why this episode, I agree with this. Yes, perhaps if I was able to watch every single episode of Star Trek and every movie right this moment, I might pick another number one. But this one, I can't disagree with it.
I can't well, here's the thing. The only thing I disagree with a little bit is the Spock and Kirk one, because that one still
don't
still
you think that's
things.
A little too obvious, though? Like, do you
is.
Think if they would have
it's
put
like
that
the,
as
on
number?
The nose? It's,
yeah,
that's the one.
That's probably
like,
why
this one, when I remember this now. Yeah, this was really sad, especially what put it over was the performances by Tony Todd and
Avery Brooks.
Yes. Dude, Jesus, when Avery grabs onto Tony Todd's face and talks to him like it's his son, and they just weep together. That's brilliant acting. I mean, Avery Brooks, damn, that man can act. He's always been one of my favorite actors of all time because of like when I think about it. Even when in my days of not liking Deep Space Nine, the only reason why I would watch Deep Space Nine is because of Avery Brooks. Avery Brooks was fantastic. Like I would, his acting performances were just powerful when you get to him. And this moment when he's holding Jake,
yeah,
as an old man is like so sad.
I think we need to go through our own list of emotional episodes. What do you think?
I think that'd be kind of cool.
Maybe we should do it throughout the year as part of our free broadcast rather than Patreon.
So we could depress everybody.
Yeah. Well, by the end, we'll probably won't be able to finish because by the end we've already been dead.
You'll be like on the floor crying.
You're going to come into the studio like, Mike, are you okay? And you're just going to see my rotting corpse because I'm in the bathtub dead.
Here's the thing. Okay. Yeah. This moment is really powerful. When I think of Avery Brooks, there are other moments when
save it. No, I agree.
There's so
in
many.
Fact, there was an episode I asked you to look up for me when we were preparing for the show
that
today.
One was
and
really
I don't
one.
Even want to bring it up because I'm going to save it because that one, dude, there was a moment when I watched that episode of Deep Space Nine. And I had tears on my face and I didn't even realize I was crying because it was so fucking personal and deep.
Yeah. And that's the beautiful thing about Star Trek. Star Trek has those moments for every single fan where they say, this meant to me so personally because I went through this. Why? Because I'm a human being.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. This does bring us to the end of our discussion for today. I want to thank everyone for listening. And it's definitely worth reminding people, Dave, that we do have a Patreon page. If you enjoy our broadcasts and the high quality content that we deliver each and every single week, please head over to patreon.com/Rain Man Digital and pledge. When you pledge $5 or more a month, you gain access to additional Star Trek discussions, reviews, breakdowns, thousands of hours of additional podcast episodes. Please help us. It's the only way we can stay alive and continue to do these discussions. So patreon.com/Rainman Digital pledge. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain.
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.